Welcome to, look, we might as well put this on, yeah? Hey, hang on a sec.
FUBAR, radio worth paying for.
Yeah, and not much of that either, as you know. Well, I think it's free for the time being for some years, but hey, that's what we're like. Can't. This is Sean Hughes, got a great show coming up this Sunday. Tony Law, one of my favourite comics. Then we have, obviously, the Big Brother contestant. I'm not going to tell you who that is yet, because I have to learn how to pronounce the name. And then we also have Justin Edwards, who's one of my favourite comics. And then Barb Young is in singing some tunes. She's just done an album, covers of Dylan and Cohen. So it'll be interesting to see a female perspective on those songs. Let's kick it off with a... Hey, this is a bit of a young people's music, East India Youth with Dripping Down, Dipping Down even. Spooky times there, East India Youth dripping down. Tony Law, how are you, fella?
Yeah, pretty good. How are you?
Did you like that spooky music for you coming in?
Oh, Brilliant. I didn't hear it.
Oh. What is
that's
it?
That's my entry music everywhere I go. What? So I'm just used to it.
Well, I did my research.
Ooh, here comes Tone.
I like the fact that I looked at your, I guess, Wikipedia.
Just oh, no.
No, it just says early life. And I don't like the fact that they go law. It should be Tony. That's just like, you're not an army. You're not an army cadet.
No.
Born in Alberta, Canada. He describes his younger self as a dickhead. And that's all it says about your younger life.
Wow, that's it?
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. I'm glad someone's gone and made the effort to put that in.
So
I've probably described myself like,
once.
Well, who hasn't?
I know, yeah.
We were all dickheads at some point, weren't we?
I don't know. Well, see, people wonder with you because you do all your time travelling all the time.
Yeah, so when were you young? That's what I get. Dark ages. No, I'd say when I was about 19. Dick.
I'm trying to
19 to 23, maybe?
I'm trying to say your comedy's timeless.
Timeless, that's beautiful.
See, that's what I was getting at there. Except for when you're on stage, you go on a particular time. In many ways.
It's timeful.
Yeah.
In many ways, it's timeful.
So you're back up to Edinburgh again this year.
Yes.
And so how is the show going?
The new show, I've got about 7 minutes.
Yeah, well.
So far, so I think it's good. We're well ahead of schedule.
And
then I'm doing the old show at the Outer Belly. The old show, last year's. 2013 Edinburgh show.
Right.
Toured, then did like 7,000 weeks at Soho Theatre, and then five nights at the Upside Down Cow Tent.
Right.
Because I don't like to concentrate, so I enjoy doing it.
When you went on tour, did it become a full two-hour show?
Yeah, then it just drags on.
I know, but...
You do one half, you know, and then have a break, and then think, oh, I could have done that. And then just everything gets longer. Not necessarily better.
Do you not find with intervals that, like, your kind of adrenaline goes a little bit and you get a bit tired?
A little bit, but I need the rest. I'm really out of shape. And also, I'm desperate for a fag. I know that's horrible, but I love that cigarette break.
Yeah, but the thing is, I understand what you're saying, but when you're on stage, you're not for one moment when you're on stage going, I'd love a fag. You're in the moment.
No, in the moment, but there's a just an annoying sense of missing out on something at the back of my head.
Nicotine.
And I think that makes for a tighter first half.
Well, no, but it's that weird thing of, like, especially if you tour straight after Edinburgh, which I tend to do, and it's, like, as you say, it's an hour and 5 in Edinburgh, and then it's 2 hours the next week.
How does that happen? Yeah, I know. How does that happen?
Well,
because you start in Edinburgh, don't you? You start dropping all the faff.
Yeah.
Like, you think it's ready on the first day of Edinburgh, but by day 5, you go, oh, no, now it's ready. And then you go, oh, no, I've got to drop that bit now.
This is one of my many problems with Edinburgh. Edinburgh, like, I'm an old-timer. Edinburgh was, you were supposed to go up with 7 minutes and develop it over
Well,
the month.
I'm flying the flag for you. I'm keeping it old school.
No, but, like, I can't stop
Critics
it.
Who see it on day 4... by the time the review comes out, it's quite a different show.
Well, absolutely, and it's their loss.
Yeah, that's why I tell them. They're always sneaky, though, aren't they? I always say, just don't come till day 10. Well, if the punters are coming.
Yeah,
but people know me well enough to know. Like, I'll often get people who come in the first week and the last week, which I think is great. How it's improved.
But you know the fact that you added another hour after last year. So has that become part of the new show as well?
Yeah. So then I'll just shave it all down. So because I'm doing an hour at the Underbelly, so I'll just shave it down to the best bits.
See, now will that be annoying having done a longer show?
You're
throwing away some of your babies.
But because it's been a couple of months, the only stuff I'll remember will have to be the good stuff.
Okay.
So I'll have forgotten the stuff I must not have enjoyed doing.
And how many times are you doing the old show in Edinburgh?
No, just in Utterbelly at South Bank. Yeah.
Okay.
End of April. What month is it now?
That's
coming up.
Yeah, this is April.
Yeah, so 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Remember,
this is great.
Remember during the week you fell for my April Fool's prank? Do you not remember that? Early on, last Monday?
Oh, what happened?
You know, that big elephant that I put outside your house?
Was that you?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that was a prank.
Yeah, well,
oh.
I was wondering why you didn't get back in touch.
I just thought that happens, though.
Yeah, well, I feel bad now.
People are always leaving elephants for me.
It was £300 an hour to hire that.
Wow,
elephant.
Okay. I thought it was normal.
You
should do more of that.
You bring elephants into your show quite a lot.
Well, that was the 2012 show.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not this one. Yeah, that one when I hung them around the room and gave people torches. Yeah, that was just, I don't know, trying to do art.
You know what I did?
Like, I don't know. I ain't too well educated, but, you know, I've seen some art.
You know what I did on Christmas Day?
What?
I was on elephants.
What? Yeah. Oh, in some hot place. where they got elephants.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's where they tend to hang out.
Yeah.
Have you ever been on an elephant?
That'd be funny if you were just like, yeah, no, it's near Stoke. There's yeah, a guy who's got some elephants.
Let them go wild.
Wouldn't that just be, and it's like raining. You're just going, oh, I'm on an elephant, but I don't know, it doesn't feel right. So where were you, like a...
Thailand.
Oh, God, that sounds terrible.
I know. Well, have you ever been on an elephant?
No.
See,
I don't even like elephants.
But it's a beautiful moment, like when you get on, because it's quite hard to get on the elephant. You know, you need, especially at my age, you need a bit of a heave up.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet.
And then you're there, and for the first 20 minutes, you're going, God, this is really, you know, this is something special.
Yeah.
And because you have to, you pretty much have to put yourself into a jockey position so your legs are up, because otherwise they can't flap their ears and they go a bit crazy.
You'd have to be able to do the splits when you ride them like a horse.
Yeah, so after a half hour...
Did you do lots of cowboy jokes?
No, after a half hour I said, could I get off, please?
Yeah, this is great, but I've sort of done it.
Yeah, I can't...
It's like skiing with me.
I can't feel my legs.
I used to do lots of skiing as a kid, and then when they book you for these gigs in the Alps sometimes to go skiing, and as soon as I get there, I think, I don't like skiing anymore. Why am I here? Such an effort to put on the boots and the skis, and you're on the mountain, you're going, I'm bored of this.
Did you come to that realization after a fall?
No, God, no, I never fall. I was, like, brilliant, like a proper good skier.
What? That's not on your early life.
Yeah, people don't know about my super skiing and ice hockey.
Is your personality the type that you just... like, just make realizations, like, I don't like skiing, like that, and that's it, done.
Yeah, so, like, do you know, like, people who are properly into music have vast, eclectic taste. And me, I'll listen to just one band for 4 months.
At home?
Anywhere. And then I'll go on to the, and then I'll listen to someone else for 4 months. Or I'll always just listen to The Who for life. Like, I listen to only Mozart for about 6 months. I just find choice, there's too much choice, and that can feel, that makes me, like, I can't go to supermarkets, because you just freak out. Panic.
You go to one aisle.
Oh, I've got to have a list, and I got to get in and get out, head down, don't look around, don't look at choice, don't look at, oh, there's choice.
But surely, like, even, I don't care how much money I ever have, I still go to the end of the aisles for the offers.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I don't want to be ripped off.
I could do that.
And then
I'll
take 7 taxis that week and not even think about it. But I'll try and get 30p off on the corn on the cob.
But is that because, I agree with you with choice. Like, just like it's taken, the media have taken a lot of things away from us, even though they think they're giving us lots more. But they've taken, choice is overrated. But do you think that's because you're from a relatively small place when you were growing up?
Yeah.
So what was your childhood like then? No choice.
No choice. You were forced to work. You were a laborer. Yeah, it was a farm. No, I was just alone all the time on the farm. It's too isolated. So did I don't know what that's got to do with choice, though.
No, because if you're in a remote place, there's very little choice. You do what you have to do.
Yeah, you have to feed the cows.
Right. Do you have brothers and sisters, though?
Yeah, 2 older ones and 1 younger sister.
And
so I didn't really, they were old enough that I didn't really, we didn't have much to do with each other.
Really? Yeah, this is sad. Good.
Well, not really. I liked it that way. I like my own time.
But you say that, but then you've got young kids. And
Yes, and I find that, you know, I love them, but...
you've got 2 kids, is it?
Two. Right. 1 set of twins.
Right.
They're 5.
I'd like to see them as individuals, so that's why I say 2 kids.
Yeah, and I can tell them, because there's 1's a boy and 1's a girl, so... But yes, so yeah, no, I have to struggle to not go distant. Oh, but daddy's reading the paper again. You fall into your dad sometimes, don't you? And just, I haven't spoken to my kids for 30 minutes. I've been reading the paper. Right. Let's get down, do some playing.
But are you, like, from your childhood wanting to be a loner, are you just separating them all
actually,
the time?
Actually, yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I didn't like it.
Well,
sometimes,
you know.
I just say, you want to see what it's like for dad? And I'll just, wait till it's like a really snowy day and just drop him in the middle of a field and say, I'll be back in an hour. Now imagine that all day.
Right. And so what age were you when you came over to London?
19.
So you couldn't wait? Did you move to a bigger place in Canada first?
No, just came straight right into the deep end. So, it's a bit of an angler.
I thought you were going to talk an angler and talk about fishing for a bit.
I was a bit of an angler, and I heard that the
the
Thames
trout
was well stocked with two-headed fish. But I wanted to come so British music and that, wasn't it?
All right, so 19. So you went to school, and then what happened?
Then, gosh, that's a
It's a long time ago.
Yeah. No, I worked in an oil field plant, factory.
You've just put every industry into that sentence. Field, factory,
I don't know.
Field.
They make parts for oil fields. Oh, no. I worked in an abattoir as well. That sort of made me a bit depressed.
Yeah.
Then I did the oil.
This is all in Alberta?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So the factory, they used to call me college boy. And I was like, but I'm like 17. I was like 18. I would be in college now if I was college boy. It's just they didn't. I guess they thought I had too much of a vocabulary. I don't know, but they always just tease me as college boy. I'm not in college. I'm here now, working. I'm not college boy.
But so at that point in your life, were you thinking
this got to get out? Oh no, I just.
So that was just to get out. Some money for the time being.
I thought, yeah, there was a depressing thought like this could be it, and I thought I'm gonna get out. I'll go to London. I'll be in a band. And then I got to London and I went, oh no, you don't know how to play any music. That's going to be a hindrance.
Did you not think this through?
No, just went for it. Because I blame The Who, because I'd be literally in the fields listening to Bob O'Reilly in a tractor. Out here in the fields. And I go, who's speaking to me?
Yeah.
I'm going there. And the streets were paved with poverty for many, many years.
So, and did you came over on your own?
Yeah. Yeah, to go travelling. Travel around Europe a bit, you know, checked out some stuff. And
what was your favourite place?
Paris, I know. Straight up, just good old Paris.
I don't like Paris.
And London. Love London. Mind you, it depends where you live, doesn't it?
Or in London?
Yeah, because you can have some bad stretches, can't you, if you live somewhere you hate.
So when you came here, so did you? You must have had very little money with it, because abattoirs don't pay that well, do they?
No, I had very little money. I spent it within 6 months.
On Who records?
I already had those cassettes with me, with my Walkman that's waterproof. Yeah. So I was always like just in the water, just listening.
But so you came over to really, so that was your, like, very vaguely to become a musician?
Just, I don't know, just something. Didn't have a real plan. And then I worked for a job for a travel company where... back then, you could lie about your education, couldn't you? So I did like this training course where you go on a coach around Europe, and then
I've seen that program, yeah. Coach trip, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like that. It's a tour. So you get 18 to 30 people on the coach, and I said, "Oh yeah, I've got a degree in history," and they're like, "All right then," and I said, "Those files will be mailed over soon from Canada. Hey, will you get those records in yet?" I was already employed. No, it should be pretty soon. I think there's something wrong with their photocopier. And so blagged my way into that and just made stuff up. I mean, I knew a bit
of
a
history buff.
Did you
know anyone over here, though, when you came over?
Yes, I had an old aunt.
Did you stay with your old aunt for a while?
For one night.
Okay.
One night.
Did you kill her?
And she is dead, but not then. I'm not saying anything. No, I mean, I've killed before, but not her.
Everyone's killed.
Yeah.
That's why we have food by radio. I mean, censorship.
I worked in an abattoir, so I don't get queasy, and I still eat bacon.
But so. How long were you supposed to be with your aunt for?
No, just one day.
So that was always the plan?
Yeah, and then I went straight around Europe, straight out.
Okay.
And then got back, and I can't even remember the order of it, but I worked at the Royal Parks for a while.
In London?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What, picking up litter?
I did that for a while, yeah. I quite liked that, because I just put my hood up and just hide.
You had your Walkman.
Just think, wow, this is it, this is life. But then I started doing, actually this is much later, this is after the travel company job, because then I lived in Paris for a bit. And then
how long did you live in Paris for? Night?
No, about 6 months.
Okay, can you speak French?
No. What? That doesn't make it no fun.
Okay.
Right? That's why it's better to go to Eastern European countries where...
Because you can fluent on all
just,
those.
Just so you don't have to bother even trying to learn it. They'd be like, well, what are you learning this for?
Right. So I'm going to get up to the point where you start comedy, and then we'll have a track.
Okay.
So you're at the parks.
Royal Parks.
Yeah, I haven't got the Who, by the way.
Oh, I was driving a garbage truck there. Right. Actually, that's when I quit and went and decided I'd give comedy a real go. It was when Princess Diana died.
Well, a lot of people started comedy then.
But it was just all these people so sad about someone they didn't know. And I was just like, I can't be around these people. And I just quit that day. Picking up their rubbish. They were so messy in their mourning of a stranger. So many Daily Mails did I pick up.
Right. And flowers.
And McDonald's. And flowers, actually, that was quite sensitive. We were all discussing, like, when are we going to destroy all these and how are we going to get them out without these people seeing? That's right. I'm not going to be here for that.
And have you ever met any of the Who, by the way?
Yes.
All right, let's play a song and you can tell us your tale. This is Gil Scott-Heron, hey? How funky are we?
Oh, awesome.
Gil Scott-Heron straight after this by the White Lies.
Cast your
competitor towards the end. Tony Law, tell me all about Roger Daltrey and your meeting.
I did the Teenage Cancer Trust gigs last year, and he said, thanks for doing it. You know, anytime you want to come to WHO gigs, let me know. So I took him up on that, and took Mary Beard, the historian, to see the WHO at Wembley. That was weird. Right. And I got to meet him again then, chatting, and he's like a hero.
Yeah.
So when I first did the Teenage Cancer Trust gig last year, I was terrified. I was like, oh, is he here? Am I gonna? And my wife just knows how much I loved him that she just went around. She disappeared for a bit, and then she comes around the corner, and she's got her arm around Roger. She goes, look who it is. And I'm like, hi. And she's going, look at him, he's going to cry. She's just teasing me. I was going to, but she, anyway. So then, and I got became sort of chummy with his son-in-law, doing various stuff. Anyways, just a couple days ago, get an email from Des saying, Roger's wondering if you'd fill in for him. All you got to do is introduce Suede. I just go, sorry, what? He's just, Roger, what's it? And I went, I'll think about it. Yes, of course I bloody will. And then Roger sends me an email saying, oh, thanks for stepping in, mate. And I said, this is unbelievable. I'm going to have to go back in time and tell my younger self.
And are you using any excuse now to email him back now?
We had a bit of a chat, but I sent the last one, so, you know.
So you're waiting?
Yeah. But, you know,
it wasn't too neat.
Got up to about four.
Was it the last one you
but
sent?
But his were getting shorter, and I thought, all right.
Yours are getting longer?
Yeah, and my sort of like, la, 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 la. Yeah, so I've shut it down. You know, just got to chill, right? Let's be cool.
But so you,
probably going to go fishing. I mean, I didn't need to drop that in there, but
under no circumstance will you email him again until he emails you back.
No,
Roger, come on, be a dude.
I was like, what about the fishing? So I said, we're going to go fishing one day, and I'm just going to not fish. I'm going to stand behind you and just talk right. Until
fishermen
all
don't
fish
like that.
Well, that's my take on fishing.
But really, they do not like. Yeah. I'm only going from any time I've seen it in films.
Well, you'd try to be cool, wouldn't you? But eventually you'd be like, so, you know, when... who wants to talk about that? But say when you and the guys are doing the thing at the one... No, it's be cool. Let's talk about something else. Talk about that. Whoa, that's a hell of a thing in Syria. That's never going to end, isn't it?
Was there anything...
should we call Pete?
Is there anything, you know, obviously because you were a bit nervous when you met him, that you went, oh, God, I've always wanted to ask him that and I forgot?
Oh, just... no, I just went blank. I've been blank about it since. I thought I knew. No, but I was, you know, you always worry that you're just dropping yourself in it. It's like, I liked when you were in the Mighty Boosh and they had you hoovering. He laughed. He loved that. He's the thing is he's so much funnier in the room than I am. Like, it's really, but I guess, you know, over the years, he's got his patter down. Yeah. Like, really funny, and he's like, what's he about, can do what I do.
He's 94 and now, yeah?
He's 194.
Right.
69 and rippled.
Rippled?
Yeah, I did feel his
tummy. You mean ripped? Or
ripped.
What does rippled mean?
It's like extra fit.
Right. And that's been fit in the water.
And this is what I said. I don't know if I should even be embarrassed is what I said. I just went, fucking hell, Rod, you're fit. And he's a 69 town. That's gone, I know, you fucker. And I just couldn't stop swearing.
You just went, don't call me town.
Tony.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't know each other that well, Raj. But so listen, I believe you have to go. You have
I got a bit nervous the second time I saw him, like of the many times we've been hanging out. I got a bit pissed actually because I was so terrified after the WHO gig to go downstairs. I was really neck in the pints. I know I shouldn't have been. Mary had a few wines too, but it was
Mary
fun.
Beard.
Yeah, so when I went downstairs to see her, you got to go through like five different levels of backstageness, don't you?
Yeah.
And every time you go to the next one, I like looking back at the people who are only stuck in phase two. Later, losers. And then the next one, oh yeah, I'm going in further. Later, losers, you're only on tier three. And then finally you go around the corner and there's Raj on his own going, town!
Just you two.
Yeah. And there's other people close by in case I turn.
Yeah.
You know, but, and I said, I said, sorry, Roger, I'm a bit pissed. And he says, something like, you know, that's all right. And I said, well, you know what it's like, hanging out with guys, drink lots, like probably one of the greatest alcoholics in history was like your drummer. And luckily he laughed.
I got so drunk once, I met Robert Smith. And I went to the Cure.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just to put myself down.
Yeah.
So I went to the show and I got really way too wasted. And his mates were Depeche Mode. And... And the guy, Martin Gore from Depeche Mode, apparently I was talking to him, and then I went to a Depeche Mode 2 weeks later and went, all right, Martin, he looked at me and went, so you can speak?
Oh, wow.
So I don't know what the fuck I was talking to him about,
but no.
I was that drunk where just completely...
If someone like that says you were hammered, then you think, wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I know, yeah. I actually...
Sure, if you knew, yeah.
I took a step back in my life after that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if Raj says, you need to slow down there, you think, wow. So, so Keith, and now me.
Well, listen. Thanks very much for coming in.
Oh,
Tony.
Thanks for having me so much.
Do you know the name of the show?
The new show. Yeah. The one at the Utterbelly is called Nonsense Overdrive.
Loving it.
And the one in Edinburgh is going to be called Enter the Tone Zone.
Okay, right. There you go.
Yeah.
And also, I'm just so delighted because you've worked really hard. Like, we'll get you in another time because we didn't really talk
That'd
about
be
the
fun.
Career. But you've worked so hard, but it's kind of come together the last 3 years now, hasn't it?
Yeah, four shows in a row. This will be the fifth one in a row. It's probably then, yeah.
Yeah.
Just getting off the gigs where people hated me.
Yeah, well, listen, well done for...
thank you.
Absolutely well-deserved as well. Now I'll play that track for you, because they've got a weird system here where you think the next track is going to be where it says one,
right.
But apparently it's not. So here's Gil Scott Heron for you, Tony Law.
Oh, there it is.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. Not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Stag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the point from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. Song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hey, funky, funky times. Gil Scott Heron, the revolution will not be televised. Now we have our big brother contestant to see what they're up to. Benny, thanks very much for coming in. What's your full name?
Thank you for having me. It's Benazir.
Right.
It's actually Benazir, yes.
But everyone calls you Benny?
Benny, yeah. Benny for sure. I picked that up when I was about 10 years old at primary school when no one could say my name back then in the 80s.
But they're okay now.
They're all right now because, I mean, Benazir's like easy compared to some of the other names.
But back in the 80s as well, the only famous Benny was that Benny from
Benny,
Crossroads.
Do you know what? I'm Benny Hill.
Right.
So yeah. I got it hard as a child.
So you basically, did this come up when you were in the Big Brother about how you were basically forced to seek asylum from Pakistan?
I don't think it came up in the house, actually, but yeah, that's true. My father had to flee from a dictator called Ziaulak back in 1980.
Fucker.
Yeah, you know it. So, yeah, we couldn't go back until he died. So he died.
So what did your dad do that made him want to get your dad?
He's very political and an activist, and he spoke up against this guy's regime.
Right.
You know, he essentially killed Benazir Bhutto's father. I was named after Benazir Bhutto.
Okay.
Yeah, so my dad was very outspoken against this dictator's regime. So he put a bounty on my dad's head.
How much?
I don't know. It's no longer there, though.
Was it quite literally a bounty?
It was literally a bounty, yeah.
Right. Well, see, that's fairly heavy for a child to go through, though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's
so
quite...
you were born in Pakistan, then?
I was born there. I was about one when I came here.
Right, so you wouldn't...
I wouldn't know, but my brother, my oldest brother, still remembers being told to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and ushered out of the house and ushered away onto a plane at 4 o'clock in the morning by my mother. My dad was already here. Okay. My mother escaped with myself and my two brothers.
What, so was your dad working with diplomacy, so he was traveling all over the place anyway?
Well, he was... Somehow, I don't know what he'd done, but he managed to get the hell out of the country.
I think you should maybe... Is he still around?
He's around, yeah.
Well, I think there's questions you need to ask this fella about your pertinent childhood. But how come he was in London before? Had he had to get out of the...
Well, he got out. He just had to escape, so he found any means to escape.
Right.
And he got here, and I think about 6 months later, my mother escaped with myself and my two brothers.
And so are they kind of, even though he's a dictator, was he one of those family-orientated where he wouldn't go near the wife? It was the man he wanted, or was he looking for your
mother? Oh, he would have got my mother, yeah. She had to run away as well. At 4 o'clock in the morning, she had to leave and just leave everything and get on a plane.
So was that 4 o'clock in the morning, was that Ryanair?
Oh, I don't know.
Because they're the only ones who travel at that time, isn't it?
No, I don't know. Probably Pakistani International Airways.
So then, obviously, you just found this out as you went along. Cause...
Yeah. I mean, I remember my mum screaming with joy in 1988 when I was just a child, and she was screaming, yeah, he's dead. And I was like, yeah, okay. But then I found out afterwards that, the dictator died.
Right.
So we were allowed to go back into the country.
And did they go back?
My parents and myself and my brothers all went back, yes.
At what age was that?
I was eight years old.
Oh, so right. So where did you go when you came to England at one?
We lived in Willesden.
Right, hey, Irish community welcomed you open-handed.
But now we live in Kensington.
Right, you're saying Willesden isn't
No, Willesden's good. My partner's from Willesden.
I could see the way your face there was going, But then that must have been really odd, like at eight being told to go back to Pakistan, because you're at that age where you kind of formulated friendships and
stuff. Yeah, I mean, we were going back to live there, but I mean, like, we'd already settled here.
All right, going to live there.
But my whole family were in Pakistan, so we weren't able to see my extended family. My mother was unable to see her mother and so on. So although we'd settled here, we weren't allowed to go back into the country as a visitor.
So you went back to visit them, right?
Yes, yes.
But was there any talk about, look, he's gone now, let's live in Pakistan again?
Oh, no, absolutely not. My father settled here.
Wilson kind of really grabs you, doesn't it?
Yeah, he grabbed us in, pulled us in the community. And, this country's given us a lot, and we've also tried to contribute back.
What have you personally done, Benny?
Well, I'm standing for council elections in May.
Wowzer!
In Kensington.
We got the right Big Brother contestant in here. Which party?
Labour.
You're standing for the council?
Yes.
And so how do you go about doing that?
Well, you join the Labour Party and then you...
Do you have to?
Become, yes.
Right.
Unless you want to stand as an independent, which you can as well. But I've been involved in Labour Party for a very long time. My father was involved in Labour Party for
a long time. Was the Labour Party in government when you got your asylum?
No, it was Thatcher.
Well, then you must love Thatcher, then.
Do you know what? I don't love Thatcher, but...
Thatcher saved your life, Benny.
She snatched the milk.
Yeah, but she saved your life. I'm not trying to kind of big up Thatcher, but personally, she saved your life.
Do you know what? England saved our life, and I'm so grateful to
Thatcher,
England.
Thatcher, sign that thing. Send, let Benny in. Let her into the country. Give them a place in Willesden.
Yeah, no, we're grateful.
You're not your turncoat. You turned to Labour. You're battling against the Tories now, which I respect. But and so, so is it a situation where, like, I take it there's loads of councillors coming up for Labour in the election?
In Kensington, yeah. Right. I mean, we've got a few spots that we think we could win, and I'm in one of those spots where we currently have Labour councillors. And I think it's important to have opposition in Kensington because they're all Tories.
Yeah.
And
but so, will you go into specialised part of counselling or what?
I would like to probably go into family and children's service, and because I've been a youth worker and work with children.
But is that a thing that's decided beforehand?
No, I think once you are elected,
yeah,
then there's different committees you can go on to where you help make decisions for the council.
And are you canvassing already?
Yes.
Right. And
I've got a six-month-old as well, so I'm canvassing and juggling being mother and stuff.
Well, that's what everyone does. But but so, have you got your patter down now, yeah? Are you actually going door-to-door?
Yes.
All right. I'm answering. Look, we'll play a tune, okay. So I don't want to put you on the spot. And then I'm answering my door, and you're going to talk to me.
Okay.
You're going to try and get me to vote.
Oh, God.
I'll give you... I'm only going to give you two minutes 50. This is Willie Mason. What is this?
What is this? Evergreens are dying. Are they even trying? What is this? All the money's dying. Is it worth trying? When they fall, then we'll know each other. What is this? One cannot trust the other. They are such lonely brothers. This try and run for cover, each running from the other. When they fall, then they'll know each other. And when we fall, we make room for another. When they fall, they'll make room.
Scenario is I'm at home listening to Willie Manson playing What Is This, and then all of a sudden my doorbell goes. Whoops, no. That's how my doorbell rings. And I go, hello, can I help you?
Hi, is that Sean?
Yeah.
Hi, Sean. I'm just calling about the local elections in May. Are you?
See ya.
All right.
So, well, is there elections in May?
Yeah.
Right.
Local elections, council elections.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if you tend to vote?
Yeah, I do vote, yeah.
Okay. Well, can I give you this leaflet to have a look at?
Well, what are you all about? What changes are you going to make?
Well, we're all about helping people and supporting mothers and supporting young people and helping...
What about me?
Yeah, and you? How can we help you? What issues are you having locally that I can help you with?
I don't really like my neighbours.
Okay, what's the problem with them?
Just don't... Personality clash.
Okay.
Yeah. How can you help me with that?
I'll have to talk to my colleagues and get back to you.
Look, Benny, I haven't got any kids.
Yeah.
Right? And I pay all my tax, so I'm paying for people's education, which I don't mind, but maybe I should be getting some extra service because I'm not getting anything from that. Can you help me?
What would you like, though?
Well, what kind of services can the council offer me?
Well, at the moment, the council's cleansing the borough. They're getting rid of people. And I can see you live in social housing. Now, your rent's probably gone up. And
a little bit, yeah.
We would campaign against that, which is what we're doing currently.
But to a private landlord, how can you do that?
What do you mean?
What, you're going to get my rent down?
No, well, we're campaigning against it. But obviously, whenever we stand up in council, we are outnumbered by the Tories. But the more of us you have in there, the more likely it is that we can fight for your rights.
To party!
Yeah, to party too, yeah.
And Benny, you're going to have to do a bit better, because, like, you know, the issues are good,
yes.
But you're not selling yourself.
I'm sorry.
The first thing you said to me was, have a look at my leaflet. You're there in person. Don't be saying, have a look at my leaflet.
I know, but I'm a bit nervous.
But you've been on Big Brother, you know?
I know.
So why did you go on Big Brother then? Was it to get asylum from your parents? What?
I don't know. Honestly, it was just an experience. It was just an experiment. I thought, can I get on, really? And I went with a couple of people who were going to audition seriously.
Yeah.
I wasn't too serious about auditioning. And as I got through, I thought, this is an interesting process. So I went with it. And lo and behold, I ended up going through. But then when I was in there, obviously, I was, like, overwhelmed with the whole experience.
How long did you last?
4 days.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Amanda, what are we doing with someone who's on it for 4 days? For God's sakes. And so what? So how does that feel when you're voted by the people then?
Well, it was a twist, wasn't it? So we weren't really housemates. We were just like refugees, really, living on the floor and not having anything to eat, not full housemates.
Right.
And a lot of people crumbled in those 4 days, and I kind of kept strong.
Well, you're a strong lady, aren't
you? Yeah, I'm a strong lady, and I kept strong. And I remember Angel crying and breaking down. I was helping. I gave her my blanket. And, you know...
See, maybe when you go door-to-door canvassing, offer people the blanket, don't just go, here's a leaflet.
Well, if they need a blanket, I can help them.
I'm saying is have some blankets in the boot of the car.
All right, then. All okay. Right?
Yeah. But so 4 days, and then... So what, were you voted out by the public?
Well, it was a vote to save. And I realised when I came out that I was not shown much on the... Like, they didn't show...
Because
I'm not controversial enough. No, it's true, though. But honestly, maybe I wasn't controversial enough. I wasn't loud enough. I wasn't all those things. But I was who I was. And I don't think I was as quiet as they showed me to be. And if you asked any of the other housemates, I'm sure they would agree.
So you think they edited against you because they wanted you out?
I think they wanted me out because I wasn't controversial enough. I wasn't doing what they wanted.
Did you still have that big media furore straight afterwards?
There was a few people interested, yeah. There was a lot of stuff going on straight after, and it was a bit mad.
Right.
But I kept everything private because I've been, you know, I've been a youth worker and...
Benny, what kind of stuff did you keep private?
Stuff, just everything, like my life.
There's no censorship on
this. I didn't go and get an agent. I didn't go and get my boobs out and do all these things. I just kept it.
Well, what's this topless picture I have of you here from the internet? What's all that?
I kept it real, you know?
So and at that time, before that, what was your job before you went into Big Brother?
I was a youth worker and I worked in a college as well.
Right. And then you went back to that?
I went back to working with children, yes. And then I ended up becoming self-employed and working with a disabled child.
And what, as their carer?
As a carer, right. Yes. And now I currently have my own business, cleaning business, and I work for a newspaper as well.
Whoa.
Sorry.
Your own cleaning business?
Yes.
What, where you... You kind of, you're the agent, you get the cleaners.
Oh, yeah.
All right, what percentage of their wages do you take? This could be a big blow for your council hopes.
Do you know what? I don't take a percentage of their wages. The way it works is we're a franchise, and the margins are very little. So they're well paid and well looked after. We took them all out for lunch last month.
Yeah, you're trying too hard now.
So,
come on, don't be a politician. How much do they get an hour?
Some of them are on $6.50.
That's not enough.
I know it's not, but you know, we're a small company. If I started the company from scratch, I would be giving them a hell of a lot more. But the margins are so little. It's a franchise, and we're given these contracts.
Right.
And if you look at the figures...
That is minimum wage, though, isn't it?
You know what? No, minimum wage is $6.31.
It's going up, though.
It is going up, which is great.
Well, but not for your business.
No, it is great, because we're going to put our prices up.
Okay.
And the clients will have to pay more.
But so how much do you charge your clients, then?
At the moment, because it's a franchise, like I said.
Okay, I'm not going to give you our time.
We are only paid about £11 an hour. From that, 12.5% goes to the company.
Right.
So do your figures.
Well, And this it's is tough. This is in Kensington, is it?
This is all around North London and Kensington.
Right. And how do you... Because I have a cleaner, which I pay a bit more than...
Which is great.
Yeah, because I'd feel too guilty about that.
Yeah.
But I had some really bad cleaners, and from proper agencies. So how do you know who's going to be a good cleaner?
We keep in touch with the clients, and we give most people a chance who want to work. That's how we know. We just kind of support them and guide them through working. And it's all part-time. So they all do other jobs as well.
Okay, so it's not legit. I think you've blown it. There's no taxman paid here at all.
What do you mean? I did PAYE. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's a good
idea. I'm trying to do something in my life.
Absolutely.
You know?
And have you got kids yourself now?
I've got a son, yeah, six months old.
Right. And that, are you going to have, is that the first of many?
Hopefully.
Well, good on you. And so you've got a very busy spread at the moment then. Like, you know, you've got the kind of cleaning business.
Yeah.
The young child, the kind of council.
And I work for Asian Sunday newspaper as well.
So, and what, a column?
I do showbiz reporting.
From where?
From London.
Would you be talking about this particular?
I could do, yeah. Could
but so do. What, do you go to openings for the Asian paper?
Yeah.
So what was the last show you went to see then?
I went to, what do you mean openings, like shows?
Yeah, like... Premieres and stuff.
I know, I don't get to go to premieres. We're not that big yet.
Yeah, but
we're getting there.
I'm telling you, all you have to do is say, we're the biggest Asian paper. Like, you know, that's an audience that probably...
We're a free paper, which is great, and we're a Sunday paper, which is unique.
Right. So where do people get the free paper, then?
Well, at the moment, we're spreading out across London. It was based in Bradford for the last 2 years.
Bradford?
Yeah.
Right.
But we've just hit London.
So is it a national paper, then?
It's becoming national, yes.
Well, that's I think
it's getting bigger and bigger
definitely,
now.
Like, I think there's two Irish papers in London. You know, so so there's no Asian paper in London.
There
now
are Asian papers, but this is the first free Asian Sunday paper, and it's available in that big, you know, that big Hoover building.
Yeah.
The Queen Hoover building, which is Tesco's.
Yeah.
It's available in there.
But what, you have to travel all the way up the North Circle to get a free paper?
But it's available around that region at the moment, and we deliver door-to-door as well. 20,000 people get it.
And do you canvas at the same time? There's a free paper!
No, I don't do the paper. I don't deliver.
Right. But no, it's an opportunity to
do
some free stuff. But, so what events do they send you to as your showbiz correspondent?
Well, I went to meet Priyanka Chopra, who is a massive Indian actress, who is now modelling for Guess jeans and stuff,
okay.
And I went to see her in January, and we've just done Inspirational Women Awards in Bradford, which is an award ceremony celebrating women.
Well, I got that from the...
Yes, from the title, it's tough.
But, and so, have you got anything exciting that they're sending? Honestly, look, you can blag, you just say, we're the only Sunday Asian newspaper, and like say, we want to go to see... Whatever rubbish the next thing Brad Pitt's in.
Yeah.
And get there. And
okay,
get the free
that's
tickets.
A really good tip.
Yeah, but honestly, it will work.
Yeah.
We're actually not even on air, and you've come in.
I know, and I think it's great. I was just talking to your colleague outside. It's a great radio station.
Well, listen, Benny, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
I'm really good luck with the council.
Thank you so much.
But you won't be too disappointed if you don't get in, no?
I've already stood for two, but we stood in really bad...
You've already stood for two?
It's two. One was a by-election and one was in 2010. And they were really tough wards.
What, a proper by-election? Not for the council?
For the council.
Right. And how bad did you get
beat? I swung it by 8%. It's a massive Tory majority there.
But you lost?
But I lost, but I swung it.
I swung it by
8%. But you know what? Now I'm standing in a really cool ward, which is... going to elect me, and if they don't, hey, you know what, I'll keep going because I believe in fighting for people and I'll keep doing that.
Well, look, good on you.
Thank you.
You're a better person than me. vote for Benny. Thank you so much for coming.
Cheers.
Out, really. We were about to shake hands, but
it's
radio.
Right.
I'm going to try and put on the rest of this track here. This is French because I'm so international.
My sin.
There was another song. Now, live music. Barb Young has come in with her accompanist,
Simon Wallace.
Yeah. And so on keyboards. And so, Barb, I have known you for a long time, even though I haven't seen you for a while.
I know.
Because people don't realise that when the comedy circuit started, it was called the cabaret circuit.
Alternative cabaret circuit. Non-sexist, non-racist, non-anything.
Yeah,
and everybody
wasn't much fun.
Could do it. It was great, though. We all ate a lot of muesli.
But the thing is, isn't that amazing that that's where... Because I kind of missed that, that there could be a band on. I don't really miss the Jugglers, but it was... You know, it was kind of... but that's just not done anymore, is it?
No, I know. And they tried to. I'll tell you who tried to do it. You'll remember Warren Lakin.
Right.
He tried to sort of reintroduce the idea of new variety. And it just didn't really work because that whole kind of comedic vehicle had gone so far up the motorway of life that there was no change in direction. I think it's a shame, really.
But you weren't just on that circuit. You were on the music circuit as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were just getting the best of both. We had to get rid.
I know.
We had to get rid of you.
I know,
you were...
because we were milking two cows at the same time.
It's just not fair. But now you've been doing outstanding work for such a long time. Now, but your new record... is you've brought out an album of cover versions of Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, yeah, and of course I don't call them cover versions, I call them reinterpretations.
Well, excuse me. That's why you're not on the comedy circuit anymore.
No.
That kind of attitude to life. Here's my reinterpretation. Jimmy Carr's reinterpreted some of my jokes.
Oh, did he?
Why those two? Obviously they're great guys, but they sing from a very male point of view, though, don't they?
Yeah, but I've been doing Dylan work. This is my third album of Bob Dylan's songs. So kind of, Bob Dylan's my sort of, you know, font of all wisdom, really. And why those two? Because they come from the same kind of root of songwriting, although they took different paths out of it. And because both of them write political songs and philosophical songs, and this whole point of this album was there's not a love song in sight. It's about philosophy and politics and things that, you know, I'd quite like people to think about.
Is it a bit like when, so before you reinterpret the song, do you look at the lyrics like very much like a poem and go, right, I'm going to see what the meanings are here?
No, I don't do that at all. No, I listen to loads and loads and loads of songs. And then Simon and I sit down in the studio and we play them through, and some speak to you and some don't. And they kind of make their own case. They, you know, they're like sort of lawyers coming into court. They make their own case, and if we think, well, that's working, we'll stay with it.
Well, that's a nice organic way of looking at it. I still prefer mine, of actually understanding the lyrics properly and studying them. But, you know, who's me to say? But
you know what I think, though, seriously, in a serious answer to that, if I'm singing the song right, then people get what the lyrics mean.
I love the fact just the word right there, you went all West Country on one word.
Did I? Yeah. I'm not from the West Country.
But you went right.
Yeah. Did I go right like that?
Because
I'm actually from the North. You know, which is more right.
Yeah.
That'd be more right, wouldn't it? So I wonder how that happened.
it's all that yoga you're doing, I think.
Maybe I was taken over by the spirit of a guru from Devon.
Before you do your first track, have the boys heard the interpretations?
Well, I always send my Dylan work, because Dylan's management and right-hand team, as it were, have been incredibly nice to me over the years. So I send them everything I do. And I sent them this album because I was a little bit apprehensive about it. I thought, well, I hope they're going to like this, because this is, you know, this is the serious material from effectively the 1960s. And,
yeah.
Ooh, how, and I got a really nice email back, which said, Bob, thank you for sending this album. There is some serious music here. This is very heavy music. And the best compliment we can pay you is that you have done these songs justice.
I thought you were going to say, and the best compliment we can pay you is we're not suing. and has he heard all the records that you did with him?
Oh, you've got to keep stop making me laugh like that, because people are going to think that somebody's demented in here.
That's great. But look, less of my jibber-jabber. So what song are you going to do first?
We're going to do Everybody Knows by Leonard Cohen and Sharon Robinson.
Who's this Sharon Robinson woman?
Well, she worked with Leonard Cohen on a number of songs. This is one, and actually quite a lot of the political ones, interestingly.
Right. And will it be very obvious what the song's about?
Oh, I should think so.
I should cocoa is the expression, really, Barb. I'll let you... this is Barb Younger and Simon doing a Leonard Cohen song for us.
Well, everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich stay rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. The captain lied. Everybody got that sinking feeling like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pocket. Everybody want a box of chocolates and a long-stemmed rose. Everybody knows. And everybody knows that you love me, baby. You really do. Everybody knows that you've been faithful, yeah, give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people that you had to meet without your clothes. Everybody knows. And everybody knows that it's now or never. Everybody knows that it's me or you. Everybody knows you live forever, yeah, when you take a line or two. Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows.
To the beach.
Yeah. Lovely, lovely. Especially for a Sunday. It's beautiful. Oddly, I couldn't help thinking, it's weird how that lovely crescendo comes in at the end as well, which you feel should be a chorus in the middle of the song.
Ah, now, I think we might have taken that and restructured it, because I think when we very, very first took the song, I think it was in the middle, and I thought it would be really nice if it built to that, because Cohen does this a lot.
Yeah.
It's got chorus that comes again and again and again, and quite often you think, that chorus is too early. Defer that chorus, hold that chorus off. We mess with
which
the songs
brave,
a little
which
bit.
Which is great.
You know?
We're
brave
I mean.
With the songs.
I think you're absolutely right. I think most people should leave the chorus till the end. That's the way, that's the new music.
I know. Can you imagine how much better Chirper Chirper Cheep Cheep would have been if they left the chorus to the end?
Most songs could, like, you know, just finish on the chorus and you
just
go.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
The other thing I would say is that's quite quick. He doesn't sing quick.
No, he does it really, really slowly and quiet. But
so
again,
what's
you know,
about 24 minutes, his version?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. But it just felt like it could, you know, it felt like it could, I mean, there's a lot of key changes in it as well. It felt like it could be like an escalating argument, you know, that suddenly led you to this place where you go, everybody knows this. Oh, we all know it. And that was quite a sort of nice thing in the arrangement. I really like that arrangement.
No, and did you and Simon both do that together?
Well, we started with an arrangement that actually I'd done with Jenny Carr, and then Simon took it away and mashed it up.
Looks like he's a bit of a masher.
Oh, yeah, he really is. Yeah. And I think we got a better song because of it, actually. I think it was better.
It was weird because when I listened to the track during the week, the album during the week, what's the name of the album again?
Hard Rain.
Hard Rain.
In a hard rain's gonna fall.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But your kind of main thing is jazz, though, isn't it?
Well, I'd say it was jazzy, you know. Because, I mean, it's a really interesting... We spent many a motorway trip arguing about what is jazz.
We all do that part.
Yeah, right. So, but for me, it's about who's playing on the album. Well, who's playing on the album? Jazz musicians are playing on the album and they bring a jazz sensibility to it.
But what I'm saying is, like, just from knowing you you're kind of... your main thing was always, like... It was always kind of jazzy.
Yeah.
Well, and was that, like, even when you started singing at the start? Because obviously, like, initially you must have been into pop music.
Yeah, no, Tamla Motown for me. I mean, I grew up with Tamla Motown, so for me it was all that kind of... And then gospel and...
Yeah.
But I'd always... I've liked... You know, you like everything, don't you? If you like music, you like... There's so much music, then there's so much that you like.
Yeah,
and over
like,
the course of time...
I don't like R&B.
As in contemporary R&B, do you mean? But as opposed to rhythm and blues, which we love.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the Rolling Stones, really, isn't it? But R&B, all that, oh, baby, you can't... I don't understand how anyone gets that.
No.
It depresses me. For me, I just go, you know, when you see the top 10 and there's like four R&B songs, I go, baby, I love... And I'm going, well, there's no tune.
No, there's no tune.
So what?
No, there's no tune and there's no melody anymore, and that's a real, real shame.
So what do people like about it? Have they got their chorus so hidden they don't bother putting it in?
That's a very good question. Or are they just doing something that's a kind of little bywater of music? Because if you look at the history of music, there have been so many bywaters.
Yeah.
And that we'll swim back into, I mean, Simon thinks we'll swim back into tunes quite soon.
I might go on the motorway with Simon. He seems like a fairly interesting chap to have out there.
Can I say, you can get in the car... as I did a couple of weeks ago at Newbury with Simon, and get out the car in London, and Simon has, during the course of that journey, gone through the following things. The use of mobile phones in Africa, how it helps people sell peanuts, the death of jazz, film music and why it's no good anymore. There was something else on that trip as well. Oh, I know, exploration of space and the modern and fantastic value of science.
Yeah, I've gone off Simon somewhat, really. I'll be travelling on my own, Simon, but thanks for the offer of a lift. Just listen to my iPod, I think.
And hitchhike.
Are you still travelling all over the world rather than just Britain, yeah?
Yeah, I'm in Connecticut in the summer and I'm back in New York in the autumn. And again in the very early
that
new
always
year.
Sounds brilliant, you know. We're going, I just did a gig in New York. But is it brilliant or is it quite
it's
hard
brilliant.
Work?
It was hard work when I started doing it. I mean, I was really lucky because 2002, when I did the first Dylan album, it was they'd had this massive amount of money to invest in a kind of, some sort of British fair in New York. And, of course, 9/11 had happened in 2001.
What was that?
And so there was all this money floating about. And I'd been offered this run at a theatre, which I couldn't have done without this money. And right. They were so happy to have somebody to give it to. They said, oh, please take this money. And then because of that, I started going back and forth to New York and playing there, and slowly, slowly, in a 10-year period, you know, built a kind of following and built.
That's brilliant, brilliant. And obviously you must still love performing. It's not just a ways to remains.
No, I love it.
Right.
But no, I mean, are you ever any happier than when you're on stage?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. But then there's getting to the stage.
No, but that's just a little bit, isn't it? That's a little blip that is, you know, that's minor compared to... We drove 7 hours the other day to get to Chester. It was because the motorway was all clogged up and the weather was terrible, blah, blah, blah. But the point is, we got to Chester and it was packed and they loved it and they got it. And you know, and you go, that's worth it. That was worth the journey.
Well, it's good to have that attitude as well. But you're right. Obviously, performance is always great. But sometimes you put in a lot of effort for very little return.
Yeah, sometimes. But not that often. I mean, not when you've done the amount of work you've done and when you've done the amount of work we've done. I think you'll get to a certain place where, you know, you're always going to... I'm always going to enjoy playing because I play with great people. And the people I play with are so fantastic that... Even if everything else is going wrong, I'm listening to what they're doing and I'm thinking, what could be nicer than this? I mean, different if you're standing up and you're there on your own.
Tell me about it. It's lonely.
It's very lonely. I don't know how you do it.
You can hear the other musicians. I can just hear the sound of sadness in my own head as I'm making people laugh. Has your voice changed much over the years? I don't recognise it, but you'd know.
Yeah, it's got higher, actually. It's got higher. I've got more range than I used to have. I mean, I used to smoke, of course, in the old days.
Yeah, nobody smokes anymore.
And nobody smokes anymore, really. And so that's been quite good.
I went out. What Barb's alluding to, I said, you know, you set up and I'll go out and have a fag. But it was because Simon started talking about space. I just went out of the room a little bit. That was the main thing there. I don't smoke.
No, no.
But so you're going to do a Bob Dylan song to finish out.
Yeah.
So a very well-known one. And hang on. So you got the lyrics in front of you. This is a bit
cheap. I'll tell you why. Because I spent the weekend working with the Royal Philharmonic and a bunch of musicians in Corby. And I'm
that sounded great until you said Corby.
I know. And I'm incredibly tired. And if you're on radio and you're tired, it's quite useful because you can, in case your mind slips... out the window.
Well, Michael Stipe does it with all his hits, even. He always has a big...
Can I say that Barbara Streisand's got one of those, what they called autocues, massive, great, big autocue. She doesn't remember any of hers.
Well, what she's got on her autocue is the money she's getting paid, because that's her motivation for a lot of her singing.
I don't think there's an autocue big enough for that.
Well, you know, it's like one of those giant-sized checks. But so you're going to do Howling in the Wind, yeah?
Blowing in the Wind.
You're not doing Howling in the Wind?
No, there's no howling in this song.
Bob Dylan, that's all he does is howl.
Oh, how could you?
I say that as a compliment to the fella.
How could you? He's a great singer.
Did you love, was it No Direction Home, that Martin Scorsese?
Yeah, I did. But my favourite, no, Don't Look Back is the one I really like, the Arthur Penn from the 60s, where he's doing
electric.
His very first tour and in Britain when he's really, no, he's not electric then, he's still acoustic. But there's a scene in a party scene where Donovan comes in, and Donovan plays for them, and they all look utterly disinterested.
Well, I think that was the time. Have you ever met Bob?
Have I ever met Bob? No, I haven't.
I have.
Have you?
Yes, I
no,
have.
You can't just go away from that.
Well,
you've got to tell me something.
No, well, because I live near a recording studio.
I know which one it is.
The church
too.
In Crouch End.
Which I've recorded in over the years.
And I was invited to a party there, and Bob Dylan was there, like dressed as a tramp.
Yeah.
And I'm all right, Bob. And he says, if you mention me on the radio, I always want to call that song Howling in the Wind. So that's what he said to me.
Did he say that to you? You were making that up with that slight expression that I can't quite tell whether that's really true or a
smiling.
Complete lie.
No, I did meet him, but obviously I just went, how are you? Like, I met Madonna as well, but that was, how are you? I don't really consider that meeting them. You know,
What did Madonna say?
Hi.
Is that it?
Well, yeah, because it was one of those where it was a party and they said, oh, this is John, this is Madonna. She had no interest in the slightest of me. So, and I wasn't going to go, I liked Like a Virgin, because I don't feel the need to just say something for the sake of it. But so I say I met them, and it's like brownie points, but I didn't really meet them, because I didn't speak to them. I don't consider that meeting people, really.
No. Well, except you did say hi. I mean, there was an exchange of information.
What? That I'm present, and you're present, and you probably don't really want to speak to me. That's the information I got from
was
that.
Was it that bad?
No, it was lovely, but like I'm sure... like. He's quite a shy man. He didn't need someone like me coming up and talking nonsense to him. And because I'm not like...
Although he was at a party.
Well, yeah, because he's mates with David Stewart,
yeah.
Who ran the thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a very famous tale. You must know that, the tale where he got the wrong address. He was
yes.
going to visit Dave Stewart.
Yes.
And he called a house instead. Yes. And he called it, and this woman up the door, and he went, is Dave there?
Yeah, and there was another Dave, and yeah. she let him in, and he sat there in the living room.
He sat there having sandwiches, waiting for Dave, the plumber, to
yes.
come in. And then he came home and says, hey, Dave, Bob Dylan's in the sitting room waiting for you. What's wrong with his toilet? So listen, thank you so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure. But it's a joy to see you.
And you.
Thanks.
So I'll let you get on with it. Are you ready, Simon?
I am.
Lovely again. Right, before I leave you go, was it like you're absolutely right? They're not cover versions; they are interpretations. Because that's one of his most angry songs. Was it hard to pull back? Because you don't sing it with any anger.
No, I sing it with something completely different. I hope, which is that the song, which is now nearly 60 years old, has the exact same meaning now. Mm. And over those 60 years, nobody seems to have listened to any one of those words.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, what were you doing?
So I sing it with sadness.
Well, see, I didn't want to say that because I wanted to know whether it was like, you know, I wasn't even thinking of sadness. I was thinking more resignation.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Or I couldn't make up my mind when you were saying it. Was it resignation or were you trying to show a little bit of hope by being it soft?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's a question. What's really interesting about it is it's a set of questions, you know. So it's not, it never gives you an answer. And in fact, what it says is there isn't an answer, really, because if you tried to find that answer, you'd be running after what? Some empty space. It's blowing in the wind. And I think that's a really kind of interesting notion. It just felt to me, when we worked on it, it never felt like doing it angrily was going to help it.
Mm. Well, yeah, because it's been done anyway, you know.
And it's been done.
But listen, Bob, you should be really proud of the album. Like,
thank
as I say,
you.
Like just hearing you do it live, it's very hard because when you listen to a record, you're washing up and stuff like that. People don't just sit there, so it's really nice to concentrate and see the interpretations that you did do. Thank you so much as well, Simon.
Such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
So the album? How can people get the album?
Oh, everywhere: Amazon, okay. Digital 7,
so
iTunes.
Say the name again.
Shops. Hard Rain.
Shops.
Yeah, you can get it in HMV.
Hard
should
Rain.
You be able to find
yeah.
one?
Hard Rain.
You'd need an app for that, wouldn't you?
I know, yeah. And then live?
Live in London at the Arts Depot on Saturday and at Pizza Express Dean Street Jazz Club, Soho Jazz
Club. You do that one quite a lot, yeah?
Yeah, a couple of times a year, and we're there on the 11th and 12th of May.
Okay, and have you got a website that people can go to?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My name, barbyunger.com, and Younger is J-U-N-G-R.
Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure. We're going to bring in Justin Edwards in a second, but we'll play a tune. I will play a long tune, so then people have time to... Simon probably wants to tell a couple of stories. So here's the Uncertain Smile.
Under my skin, where can get in. But if the sweat pours out, just shout. I'll try to swim and pull you out.
Certain smile from the, or as we call them in Dublin, de, because we can't pronounce our THs. Jules Holland's playing piano on that for Fact Finders. Right now, every week, well, not every week, but it's a Sunday, and I think Sunday should be about love. Last week we had the glowing Lucy Porter on, telling us about her love life. And because I'm slightly autistic, I thought, well, we better get the other side of that story. So we've got her husband in, Justin Edwards. Good day to you, sir.
Good day. It's lovely to be here.
So Lucy was telling us all about her drug addiction in Manchester.
Yep.
And that was around the time you met.
Well, we never actually met in Manchester. We were both there at the same time. Whenever this was, 1980-something, 1990-something. She was... we were in the same year, but
right.
Different disciplines, different academic worlds.
What were you studying?
French and drama, and she was doing English. So I don't think our paths ever crossed.
And so has the French come in handy at any point besides holidays?
No.
So
hardly ever. No. It was my parents got. You can't just do a drama degree. That's a waste of everyone's time. You'll be useless. There's no jobs in that. They said you do something useful. I've never used it once.
But with a drama degree, that's different to going to drama school. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So, it's just theory and kind of...
Yeah, yeah. It was, well, you know, theory and study of... It's like doing an English degree, but it's more about plays. It's the, but although, because it was Manchester, there was a lot of comedy, because it was obviously the young ones had been there. You know, you could sort of still smell them, or their influence in the corridors. And who else? Trevor and Simon had been there.
Well, that's a blast from the past. Yeah.
And various others. Quite a few people.
Our young audience, Trevor and Simon used to be on daytime or kids' TV.
Swing Your Pants. And it turns out one of them went to school with me as well.
Earlier on?
Well, I met them, yeah. He was in the same year as my oldest brother at school in Southampton. Well, it's a small world.
I'm getting the impression that you don't really hang out with people, because Lucy was in Manchester at the time. You didn't see her. You
never saw her.
Are you a bit of a loner?
Not at all. I was just... We met a long time after university. It was about year 19, whenever. I should know.
And that was your icebreaker? Hey, we went to...
We were at... No, I think we didn't even realise that till... We got lots of friends...
What, sex straight away? Yeah?
Straight away. We didn't mess around. But no, we've got lots of friends in common. It occasionally crops up. We go, oh, I know. I'm sure I've seen him. If, you know, some people at the wedding. I'm sure I've seen, yeah. Oh, I was in his tutorial.
But so... Did you always want to be an actor then?
I did, yeah. That was always the plan.
From what age?
I'd say quite young. Sort of, you know, 14, 15. Just think this is what I want to do. But it was the kind of school where they didn't really have...
Southampton.
Yeah, they didn't really have an arts... It wasn't very sort of arty school. And because I'm a sort of giant, they all expected me to play rugby and stuff, and I didn't.
Play any sports?
Oh, no, I hated it. I've got a brother who's about my size, and he's good at it.
Hates quite a strong emotion.
Yeah. Well, I know.
Dislike will do.
I hate rugby. Or I hated playing it.
Right. But at 14, was there some, like, film or play you saw that you went, yes?
No, I can't think of what it was. It may just... Wurzel Gummidge was filmed
A lot of people. Al Pacino, apparently.
Yeah, it was filmed in our village when I was growing up, so it was really exciting, because that was... So we'd all watch Wurzel Gummidge every week. Oh, look, there's the field up there, and there's the... Bloke from the road, because everyone was sort of in the background of it most of the time.
Did you get any extras parts in that?
I didn't. I was furious. My brothers, I've got brothers who are a little older than me, and they were all used as extras. There's some really good school scenes, which I still show to my nephews and my kids, because they're now sort of on YouTube. I'm going to pause them and go, look, there's your Uncle Andrew there, and there's Daniel. And there's it. So the whole village is kind of immortalised.
So why did you not get Aspect. On?
When it came round to us, they were still filming there the next year, and the headmistress said, no, it wastes too much time. Because they did that kind of classic TV thing of, well, we just want to film in the school for a couple of hours, and we'll pay all the children £10 each, and it'll be marvellous, and we'll pay for a new
coat of paint. It was very exciting for them.
And they were there for about 3 weeks, which was brilliant, because the kids loved it, because they kind of just took over the school, and no lessons happened, and it was all fun. But
so it must have been a slight thing then when you saw something being filmed and stuff. You went, I wouldn't mind doing this.
I thought, this looks easy.
So then why didn't you just go to drama school rather than...
Well, this was, again, my parents had this, you know, because again, you could go to university and get a grant. They're like, you've got to go to university because then you'll be fine. Because I think they always thought acting is a ridiculous waste of time. You'll give it up and get it out of your system.
And was Manchester your first choice?
It was, I think. Yeah, well, because I was doing French and drama, there's only about three places that do it.
Manchester, Paris, and
that's Le Havre. Le Havre. Yeah. Bristol, I think. No, Bristol did it. And one of the Royal Holloway or something. Yeah, so literally about three places. I said, right, you know, I want to do drama. My friend said, well, you've got to do French because I was good at French. And they said, we should do that as well. Because then when you've got this nonsense out of your system, you can go and be a French teacher.
And so coming from Hampshire to Manchester, was that a big cultural kind of...
I found it. Yeah, it was a tiny village I grew up in Hampshire. There were two boys in my year.
If anyone wants to know who they are, look at Wurzel Gummidge, they're on that.
Yeah, they'll be on there, just for you. You'll see them. Yes. So, yeah, it was Manchester. I was terrified when I first moved there. Just because it was... And I had a halls of residence just right opposite. I didn't realise at the time it was right opposite the sort of ambulance rank around the back of the MRI at the Manchester Royal Infirmary. So there were just police cars and ambulances constantly going in a stream. I remember sort of lying in this strange, cramped halls of residence room on the first night going, this place is just lawless. I mean, just listen to it.
So was it quite a sheltered upbringing then?
Yeah, definitely. Well, lovely. Very nice. I keep telling my wife's favourite stories because it was Mother's Day. Mothering Sunday is yesterday, or in fact a week ago, as it will be.
People know this isn't life.
Yeah. And we used to go, and my wife still finds this, because we used to sing the church choir. And
you used to sing?
Yeah, in the Sunday school, we'd go out and pick wild flowers. We'd go out and look up to the woods, Fern Hill Woods, just to be precise, and pick posies of wild flowers for our mothers that we would then present to them in the Mothering Sunday service. And I tell this to my wife, and she's convinced that I've just had some drug-addled recollection of the 1950s, and this could never have happened.
You know, it does sound nice, but what you probably don't tell is a lot of the time it was piss and wet rain, and it wasn't as romantic as...
Oh, I don't know. No, it was a glorious childhood. But that was, yeah, very, it was very different from Manchester, certainly. Yeah.
And so in Manchester then you were there for 4 years?
Four long years.
And then what happened next?
Then I was what did I do? Oh, I worked in a hotel for a year. Did a lot of hotel and catering.
In Manchester?
No, outside Stratford-on-Avon.
See, this is what I don't get when people, like, you study drama and French and then you go, right, I'll work as a
work
hotel.
In a hotel, yeah. Well, I used to work there a lot in sort of holidays and I just thought, well, I want to go to drama school. My parents just thought, you're ridiculous. I think they just thought if they just kept me away from it for long enough that I'd give it up.
And were you very tall very early?
Yep.
So was that, I guess you used to get picked on for that, yeah?
Not really, no. I don't remember, I never sort of got into fights over it.
But it's just, that would be in your nickname would have been
something. Yeah, it was always some kind of lucky thing. But always, because I was never thin, I was always huge and tall. So I think, yeah.
So what height are you?
6'5", if I kind of really stand up straight.
Yeah. A lot of the time you're... Do you end up crouching a lot then?
Yeah, I'd spend a lot of time kneeling down, lying on the floor. What's going to happen with kids? You just graduate, you stop sitting on sofas and chairs, you just sit on the floor.
I noticed no scars on your forehead.
No, I really did myself last week in a hotel in York about 2 weeks ago. I knocked myself out on a fire escape sign.
Right.
Which I do it occasionally, but once or twice.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But really. I was looking at your face going, there must be a couple of scars from
top of the head, because my head is just underneath most door frames. And if they're a little centimetre lower and I'm not noticing, I can go straight into them. So, yeah.
So you're just kind of pretty much finding yourself at this point?
Yeah. This was, when was this? In
After Manchester.
Manchester, yeah. I was working there. Yeah, that had very low beams, that hotel as well. I did knock myself out a lot there.
Did you get involved in the drug culture, like coming from the sheltered upbringing in Manchester?
No, not really. I mean, no more so than, you know, most students. You get a bit stoned.
But that's what I mean. But, like, as I say, because you were coming from the small village, some of them would have been probably used to that already.
So there were definitely... It wasn't that. I mean, I've been, you know, school in Southampton, which is a bit more exciting than the home that I came for. But no, I didn't. I got lots of friends that went to Manchester, and I was quite surprised. They said, oh, we chose this because of the music scene. And that astounded. I thought, why would you come in for that? I never got into that. And also, I was there just at the tail end of Manchester, because I've got my brother, who's 5 years older, was there as well, but he was there
when it was kicking.
And he said he never went to a single nightclub once. And, you know, he said it was still, like, it was very local. Like, if you're into that, you're into it. He said it didn't really.
Yeah.
He said it passed by, you know.
Well, yeah, no, it's
a lot of people.
It's because very little culturally comes out. So when something big comes out, they make a huge
deal. Everyone goes, this is it. I mean, I was there just as I was leaving. That's when Oasis were. And that was extraordinary. You'd walk down any street in Manchester and you'd hear it being played from every window or
they
every
were
car.
The, was Oasis. They were so the
that
zeitgeist.
That was huge. But
with their Beatles-esque music.
Yes.
So then you. So what happened? Then you started studying drama properly.
Then I did a postgraduate one year course at drama school, because that was the only thing I could afford. I couldn't do the full. Also, if I'd done 3 years, I'd have been in education for about 8 years. Ridiculous! I should have been a doctor.
That's the way it goes. So a year course in drama.
Yes.
So do you think that was enough?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't know. I'm always sort of scathing and skeptical about drama schools. You can teach people to act. You can't teach people to act. You can improve them, or you can sort of give, you can have, it's useful skills, good skill sets, kind of vocal things and, you know, musical ability and whatever, all of that. It's quite technical, I think.
So what was your first job then as an actor?
My first job was I did a musical tour of Italy in a Beatles musical called Twist Ish Out, which was a kind of theater.
Were you one of the Beatles?
I was not one of the Beatles. No, I was Brian Epstein. Came on as Brian Epstein. It was for schools, but what we do is we go to these really big theatres in everywhere, the whole up and down the country for 3 hours. Great fun, but and then they'd bus in sort of 600 or 700 Italian school kids, and we do this whole kind of History of the Beatles musical.
In English,
and they'd all obviously studied the script before they came, and then they apparently, according to some loophole, the producer said we were allowed to do the songs because it was before midday and it was for educational purposes. I still don't think they had any right to do any of it.
Well, back up a bit. Yeah. The shows were on before midday.
Yeah, there was a night we do and start at 9 in the morning. Well, the Italian school day starts at 7 or something stupid because they're
fascists.
Yeah, and they all get to sleep in the afternoon or something, all poo in the shower. And so we did the shows about 9 in the morning, I think, yeah. I think occasionally we do sort of two, but so we finished work by sort of one.
What would you do for the day?
We'd get in these buses and be driven by our insane Italian technicians to the next town. We go, right, now we're going.
There's always one, is
one overnight. Never did a double. We did a week in Milan, And that was it. And then we said, all right, we're going to drive to Turin. So we drive to Turin and all just pass out and sleep in the minibus. And then we'd go out every night from 5 till about 3 in the morning and properly go mad and tie one on. Because we had, like, you know, cash expenses and lira, and it was quite cheap and it was quite good fun.
Lira?
I know.
That's a lot of lira.
That was a lot of fun. And then we'd have to get up at 7 and, you know, sweat our way through this horrific musical about the Beatles again, and then fall asleep in the minibus, and just did that solidly for sort of 7 days.
Yeah, but you can kind of do that.
They
can
do it when you're 20. Yeah, exactly. It was fine. We had, you know, we'd always get Sundays off. We just
how did you get that job though?
I auditioned for it. It was just one of those things. It was after I left drama school.
From the stage or something?
Yeah, well, no, it was PCR, was it used to be, which was called Production Casting Report. I think it still goes. Right. It's kind of like, you know, you subscribe to it, and it's all lowly paid. Rubbish theatre jobs.
Just for the experience. Things.
Yeah, but it's great fun. I mean, yeah, really good time growing up. And had a very... B.S. was Brian Epstein, then I died and came... No, it was Stuart Sutcliffe. That was Stuart Sutcliffe, then I died and came... You know, went back off, put on a different wig, came on as Brian Epstein. Then I died, and I came on as Alan Klein briefly at the end. It was...
Sounds great. When are they bringing it to the West End?
I'm not... It was too good. It was too good for the West End. Once, on one memorable day, when Paul McCartney was just too hungover to perform, I was Paul McCartney for the first half of the show, because right. He just couldn't do it.
And so you had to sing all the songs?
Yeah, and it was just, God, it's ridiculous. But so there's a generation of Italian school children. I've got a very warped view of what the history of the 60s, or what the whole history of the Beatles was all about.
Just come, why did
I didn't know Brian Epstein was so tall.
Yeah, why did Stuart so tall? I thought he died, but he became the manager after he died.
I think it made about as much sense as that. They'd ask us questions at the end. They'd all be prompted by their English teachers. They, you know, have got any questions? And they just, basically, they just couldn't understand anything we'd done for 2 hours.
So, what kind of questions were they asking? Though, were you three people in that?
There were things in it. If you remember, was it Paul? I'll tell you. What was it? John Lennon's thing when he used to say, "I'll tell you, Paul, we're going to be toppermost or the poppermost," and they'd always go, "Yeah, what is toppermost? Toppermost? What does this mean? What does this mean?" You go, "Oh, it just means like, you know, top of the pops. What is top of pops? Well, it's like a we do."
That sounds a lot of fun.
It was fun, but yeah.
But do you think, like, on reflection, would you enjoy that more if you weren't getting lashed every night?
No, it would have been harder work. I think that was the kind of joy of it, was managing to struggle through it. It's like doing Edinburgh when you kind of, in your youth, you kind of...
Did you never have even a hotel? It was always on the bus overnight.
No, we stayed in a really grim two-star. It was a very low-budget operation. We didn't really make any money off it, but we stayed consistently in the worst hotels, and we're all, you know, two or three to a room.
Like that program coach trip to
it was very much like that, but that looks a bit more luxurious.
And so, right, and at this point you're thinking, what's going on? You know, because you're basically, this is your first job.
This is my first job. I think this will do. I was living in East Finchley at the time then, and that was...
Lived in East Finchley.
I like East Finchley.
Oh, it's tedious.
Really, I loved it. I lived in this enormously sort of weird detached house, about three or four of us sort of up there. Do you ever go to the Five Bells? That kind of huge, soulless pub.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, we lived so next door to that. I moved back there. I then lived by the back of the train station for about 2 years. Anyway.
I love the fact that in this recording studio, we all know there's an ice cream van going out. Apparently we're not soundproofed, but that's something to work on on a Sunday. But so, right, so then you were just like trying to get various bits of balls.
Yeah, no, I sort of dicked around just didn't do very, very well for about 4 or 5 years, I suppose. When was that, 96, I did the Beatles, job, 97. And then I just did, you know, rubbish things, small scale tours, and, you know, murder mystery nights, and, you know, any old.
But were you starting to think, oh my God, this is the future?
Yeah, pretty much. When I got to my 30th birthday, I thought, this is awful. In fact, I quite honestly go, if I don't, that was the year I went to Edinburgh with a sketch show. So if we don't, you know, get some work off the back of this, I've got to actually go and be a French teacher. This was the genuine kind of.
And where was the jump into comedy then with the sketch group?
That was in 2002 with the consultants. We did. We just put together, it was me and two others, and we put together kind of an hour's worth of sketches. We're all sort of out of work actors going, well, let's do something at least. Let's kind of, you know.
But had you considered comedy before?
I had. I did the Daily Telegraph open mic competition in 1996.
How did that go?
I got through to the semi-finals.
Well done, you sir.
And I was beaten by some young fool called Adam Bloom, wherever he is now. And who won it eventually? Noel Fielding. Julian Barrett won the overall competition.
Very
similar.
Very
you similar. Can't, you know. Can't.
Well, look, we'll talk about the comedy coming up, but we'll play a track. Just this is for homage for your Manchester days, okay?
Every time I think of you, I feel a shock right through the mobile. It's no problem in mind, but it's a problem in mind.
come on, Barney and Hooky, make up, will you? Come on, you're not New Order unless the 2 years are in the band. My guest is Justin Edwards. We've been talking about this phenomenal Beatlesque tour. And so, like, you've got a big CV, but there's lots of just bit parts and lots of
Yeah, and
things.
Stuff goes on. Yeah, I don't... I don't do lifestyle shows. They used to do the kids entertainer character.
Which I've never seen, but we shared a tour manager, Mike Chambers.
Oh, yeah, with...
He used to rave about your
yes,
show.
Yes, he used to come and do it, yeah. He loved that. He was with Ed Smith, wasn't he? Or Phil McIntosh. Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's a gun for hire. Yeah. But yeah, so that's a very interesting thing. So where did that character come from?
That was... I did that in 2002 with the consultants. It was just this kind of slightly lunatic monologue of a, you know, down-at-heel kids entertainer drinking. And I got a friend of mine who makes weird puppets. I said, well, just make something really... inappropriate and scary that wouldn't be right, and I'll kind of have it at this. I'll drink a can of special brew while I try and do a ventriloquist act. It was this kind of half-formed idea, and then he made, I think, the most disturbing thing anyone's ever seen. People still talk about it in horror of this. It was like a clown's face, but with the skin peeling off, held on with chains, and he dressed it in a blood-stained child's baby grow, and it was just really
sleep well, children.
See, I know, okay, it's so unpleasant that a lot of people will not come in my flat if they think it's in the house. They're genuinely nightmares.
But so did you take that up to Edinburgh?
Yeah, we took that to Edinburgh. That was so I did, as part of the sketch show, I just did this little kind of...
But you took it up as a full show then?
I did a full show in 2003. Yeah, we did the Christmas show in Edinburgh in August because it seemed like you can do that.
And but people used to love that, so you don't like doing that now anymore?
I just don't have the time. I love to do it, but it's just, I can't afford to. You know?
So it was pretty much like from what I hear, is you just, like, your character used to get more and more drunk.
Yeah, it was a challenging show.
And what time did you do this show at?
That was about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. We used to do the Christmas show. But then I have two shows in the evening. It was all, you know, there was a certain amount of real booze in it, but not that much, because I'd have to function and go and do another show in the evening, so it wasn't...
Because you were doing the sketch show?
I was doing the sketch show in the evening and other stuff.
Yeah, but because it was on at 2:30, did you get kids in thinking it was a proper kid show?
Not. I did a bit in the first year until I made it quite clear that it wasn't. It was an old show.
That must have been a nightmare.
It was awful. Well, sometimes it was. The kids didn't mind it, but the rest of the audience sitting around them were slightly going, oh, God, this is difficult. And I was quite clear with the box office after that, going, well, it's difficult because you are selling it. It's like there's this poster of a sort of faded drunk man, you know, juggling and with puppets going, oh, marvellous fun for all the family, brackets, you know, entirely unsuitable for children. So you can't really.
Yeah, no, I'll sell. Obviously, parents go, yeah, we'll
take a point
on that.
Kids to see that. Oh, God. No, don't, yeah.
So no. Your heart must have kind of, when you walked out and you saw those kids there, it must have.
Yeah, no, that was challenging. We never had any really bad ones, actually, I think. Because, I think they... Like, then you'd just say to the venue staff, look, if anyone comes in with it, just tell them what this is about and sit them at the back so none of the other audience can stare at them and go, you know...
I think it's the amount that babysitters charge, because my show's for adults only, there's always 14-year-old kids. So.
Yeah, they just come in with the parents. Look, I'll bring them in, because... I don't mind it.
14-year-olds could deal with it, but I remember doing a gig in Hull, and the parents were there with the 14-year-old, and I was having a bit of fun with them. Because, later on in the show, I talk about when you're 14, the only thing you want to do is masturbate. It says, how are you bringing them to a two-hour show where you can't masturbate? And I knew they weren't coming back for the second half. You can usually tell when you see their reaction. I could just then go, right, we'll get out of here as soon as we can.
I did this school on tour. I don't know if you ever... It's one of those weird sort of tours. It's Felsted School, something like that. But it's a theatre in a sort of big boarding school. And they always book comic acts. And I toured there. And they said, oh, yeah, don't worry. It's not just the kids from the school that come. It's loads of people from outside and the parents. And No, it wasn't. It was all of them were just these sort of pent-up, sort of slightly sexually frustrated 16-year-old boys. In this.
And you did the...
They loved it. But they I kind of said, well, what about, you know, swearing and stuff? And they said, Jason Byrne was on here last week and he's not coming back.
Yeah.
He persuaded, he was great, bribed one of the kids to, he said, I'll give you £20 if you stand up and say the headmaster's a...
You can say it on this programme.
Fool, an absolute fool. Yeah, no, he said, shocking. Stand up and say, headmaster, come. And the headmaster was and eventually got up to £50, and he had, you know what Jason's like. He sort of doesn't really doesn't censor himself.
He's got money, yeah.
Yeah, well, he's exactly rich. He can throw £50 around like that. But no, yeah. So he got this boy to stand up and shout to everyone's great glee. The headmaster's a cunt, and gave him £50.
Well, actually, I heard a story where Lee Nelson was doing a benefit for a school, and he was getting on with the headmaster, and he told the headmaster to come up at a certain point, but he'd put a picture of young kids in the headmaster's pocket. So when he had him up there, he went, "So are you a paedophile then?" You know, so that but apparently it was very, very funny though. But yeah, it's weird, the kind of weird rum gigs you get sometimes.
Yeah, why would you go and perform to a group of 16-year-old boys?
I couldn't do it. But so then, had you met Lucy at this point?
I hadn't. I met her in Edinburgh. Our paths had crossed in Berkshire. It's about 2003, 2004.
But had you seen her what's the Star Trek thing?
She's the one. That kind of, a little bit. But then, you know, you kind of think, I don't know, we were all, yes, in different... Because also, it's that kind of difference in stand-up and character. They never come together. You know, I was in a kind of different world of nights of sketch and character things. And then, you know, it's very rare to be on the same bill.
But now, is it just purely acting you're going to do now?
No, I'd like to do the live stuff, the kids entertain stuff again, but it's kind of the logistics of... I did Edinburgh 2010 was the last time I did a full show. It was great fun.
The full run as
well. Yeah, and it was good, but... With kids, I just don't ever, you know, I lose money. So that's the problem with Edinburgh. I go up there and it's two of us and I've got a van full of props. And yeah, well, this is just in the show and they've got a pianist at the end. Just endless. So it's not kind of a cheap to run thing.
We touched upon it while the record was playing, but can people get that respectable on YouTube and stuff?
I think so. It's on DVD, certainly. You can buy it for not much off eBay.
Yeah, there's a really funny sitcom that Justin was in called Respectable. And what was the premise again?
I was a slightly frustrated husband in a reasonably loveless marriage. It's not based on real life. And then I go and visit my local brothel, which is just a very suburban kind of, you know, quiet... brothel, which exists on every street, according to the writers and producers of the show. But I get sort of entangled with this prostitute, but I never have sex with her, which is a nice thing. I always just sort of, because I never quite have the nerve, and then I sort of fall in love with her and follow her around. And
is that the biggest part you've played so far? Or have you done?
I think so, consistently, because that was the full series.
And so, look, we're coming to an end, and thank you so much for coming in, Justin Edwards. But what's the... obviously, the Beatles thing is going to be hard to beat, but what is the proudest thing you've done? That you go, that's the one you want to show the kids.
I'm good. I think, show the kids. I did do a kids' sketch show. I did three series of that, which they watch now, and they kind of, I go, look, daddy's on telly, and they don't really get interested.
They don't
understand or care. So maybe when they're a bit older, but that won't be shown. I still think the thick of it is probably the best thing I've been in. But
Have you got plenty of work coming up, though, yeah?
Mustn't Grumble. I've just been doing Harry Enfield's History of BBC Two for them, and William Shakespeare film. The Horrible Histories lot of in France and Drake in that for a week, and we've done another big sitcom pilot for the BBC, all about monks.
Well, is that a go? Or
that's going. They're showing it as part of their kind of comedy showcase, and then if that goes to series, that would be nice. I play.
And you're not getting too typecast as the posh guy, though,
no? No, I play either drunk men or useless men or Jeremy Clarkson, which I've just done a few times.
Well, listen, Justin. Final question: do you still love Lucy?
Yes, of course. And I shouldn't have had to think that long.
Yeah, I just wish we'd left her.
I'm just wondering how long she paused.
Listen, folks, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I'm going to play you out with... Why not, eh? The Kinks.
We'll be right back. outside.